Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the October 15th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Arcola School Board approved bond intent, insurance updates, and policy changes by Ben Crane. The Arcola School Board approved a series of financial, policy, and personnel items during its regular meeting this week, including a resolution to issue $660,000 in working cash bonds to support the district's technology program. Board members voted to authorize the intention to issue the bonds for the purpose of increasing the district's working cash fund. The proceeds will be exclusively used for technology improvements over the next 5 school years. For several years, the district has maintained a recurring bond cycle that generates about $750,000 every 5 years to support technology infrastructure and equipment purchases. The funding allows Arcola schools to remain current with technological needs. The board also approved its annual interfund transfer from the Capital Improvement Fund to the Bond and Interest Fund. The transfer allows the district to use sales tax proceeds to pay annual debt certificate payments tied to the elementary school addition and locker room projects. These projects are expected to be fully paid off by 2033. Board members approved 3 employee health insurance plans for the 2026 calendar year, as recommended by the district's Health Insurance Committee. In connection with that approval, the board ratified a memorandum of understanding with the Arcola Education Association to purchase the board-paid premium contribution for certified staff, $865 in 2026 and $875 in 2027, up from $810 and $820, respectively. A similar adjustment was approved for support staff, matching the same contribution amounts in both years. The board approved 2 resolutions related to health and safety compliance. One allows the district to use health life safety funds to pay for its required 10-year safety inspection report completed by the architect. The second certifies the completion of an asbestos abatement program that included 4 elementary classrooms and the special services office. In other business, the board approved 2nd readings of policies included in the June 2025 press packet as recommended and approved revisions to several job descriptions, including Director of the Building and Grounds, Director of Maintenance, Custodian, Elementary Vocals Music Stipend Position, Strength and Conditioning Coach, Bilingual Paraprofessional Support, Early Childhood Compliance Manager for Services and Community, Special Olympics Sponsor. The board accepted the resignations of Brooke Lemons, full-time cook, and Christy Johns, Junior High and High School Administrative Assistant, effective January 9, 2026. New hires included Hugo Garza as high school girls track coach and Carrie Shields and Irma Moroquin as paraprofessionals. The next article from the Arthur Village Board. Village of Arthur to offer new grants to downtown businesses by Ariana Cherry. At the recent meeting on Monday, October 6th, the Arthur Village Board addressed a full agenda, tackling various issues from water leaks and street closures to computer purchases and memorial sign requests. Key topics also included the fee structure for the Arthur Community Center and the introduction of a new temporary capital improvement grant program. The new grant program aims to bolster Arthur's business district by offering one-time grants of $2,500 to existing downtown businesses, capped at a total of $50,000 through the next year. This initiative is designed to encourage building upgrades and maintain a thriving commercial area. This new incentive is expected to drive steady progress, helping to keep the Village of Arthur strong and community-focused. The Arthur Community Center's fee schedule and usage fees were visited in old business. The board agreed to allow nonprofit organizations to use the center for free. Arthur residents will be charged $10 per hour or $75 per day. To improve affordability, members decided to lower the deposits to $100. Discussions also took place regarding how to define groups as nonprofit or fee-exempt. Other items discussed or voted on. They approved $52,196 for the annual trash services, including cleanup day costs, and noted that public works staff help keep these operations efficient. President Rob Randall spoke about lower Ameren electric rates thanks to the new competitive electrical aggregation. The new rate had been lowered to 7.483 cents per kilowatt hour. Approved a street closure for Special Persons Day event at the Arthur Grade School on October 17th from 10:30 a.m. to 1:30 p.m. Trustee Grant Corum of Public Works noted that their crews have been busy tackling multiple water meter issues, completing about 30 excavations in just 3 weeks. 23 apartment meters were replaced after several units experienced failures. Dry weather hasn't helped. Crews have been dealing with 6 or 7 new leaks recently, including one at 420 South Pine Street or require tree removal before further work can continue. They approved an ordinance authorizing the sale of lot number 20, Meadowview Subdivision. Risk management premiums rose less than 4% despite last year's large payouts, and the board approved two new office computers for $2,900 to meet the upcoming Windows 11 requirement. Windows Village Clerk Erica Carter explained the upgrades were more cost-effective than retrofitting older machines. Police Chief Elliot Tinnen reported increased officer initiative ordinance contacts, 73 this month and 78 traffic stops, leading to 27 arrests and 51 citations. While serious crimes are trending down, traffic issues remain a focus. Officers also received community praise for engaging with students at the homecoming dance, which was part of an ongoing outreach effort. Discussed safety concerns with electric scooters and engine braking noise. Trustees opted for education-first enforcement on scooters and decided not to pursue additional signage for engine braking, citing safety reasons. Two memorial sign requests were approved for Richard Dick Hine and Dave Tiffin. Approved for the Village of Arthur to sponsor the Illinois Safe Routes to School Infrastructure Grant application. Next article, Newman City Council. Newman approved tree removals, events, and system upgrade by Ben Crane. The Newman City Council approved several maintenance and community-related items during its regular meeting this week, including multiple tree removals, a computer system upgrade, and use of the community building for upcoming events. A $2,000 bid to remove a tree carried over from the last month's meeting was approved after confirming the tree sits on city property. The council also approved bids to remove two maple trees on Lytle Street for $1,000 and another tree on Green Street for $1,600. The Newman GOAL organization received permission to rent the community building for two upcoming events, Trunk or Treat on October 26th from 2 to 6 p.m. and the Christmas Extravaganza scheduled for December 5th through 7th. Council members voted to waive rental fees for the October event, classifying it as a community gathering, and approved a $1 charge for the December rental. City officials discussed replacing a permanent park bench at an estimated cost of $600 and noted the community building is experiencing a roof leak. Options for repair resources are being explored. In the waterworks report, Superintendent Matthew Rideout said new water service lines have been installed and new lights are being added to a city truck. He also reported that a company currently in development has requested approximately 50,000 gallons of water per day. The council approved the purchase of an upgraded entry card system for the community building at a cost of $2,500 following compatibility issues with a newly installed computer. Bids for the sale of city's old water truck will be accepted after approval to proceed. Council members also discussed a request from the Daughters of the American Revolution to purchase a plaque commemorating the organization's 250th anniversary, but no motion was made. Trick-or-treat hours were set for Thursday, October 31st from 4 to 7 p.m. The meeting of the Newman City Council will be held at a later date. The next article, State Awards Millions for Local Road, Safety, and Infrastructure Projects by Ben Crane. State transportation officials announced millions in funding for local highway and infrastructure improvements that will impact Douglas County and the surrounding area in the coming years. According to Illinois Department of Transportation, Region 3 engineer Kensel Garnett, a series of projects along Illinois 133 and Illinois 130 will move forward as part of the state multi-year improvement program. One of the largest projects includes an 11.94-mile resurfacing on Illinois 133, stretching from half mile east of Interstate 57 to the Coles County line. The project is designed as an overlay and is programmed for $27.1 million. In that same corridor, IDOT plans to install new shoulders, safety upgrades, and culvert extensions at a cost of $3.64 million. Additional culvert replacements totaling $2.6 million are planned east of Arcola along Illinois 130 at multiple sites near Egyptian Trail, 1200 East Road, and 1315 East Road. Garnett said preliminary engineering work and utility adjustments are already underway, with construction expected to take place during the 2026 construction season, pending land acquisition and final approvals. There's quite a bit of money invested in this area, Garnett said. The projects are programmed and moving forward through a multi-year plan. At the county level, Douglas County engineer Jim Crane said that local highway department has also secured substantial funding through multiple programs, helping to ease the burden on local budgets. Crane said the county received $3.45 million in Highway Safety Improvements Program, the HSIP, funds for a two-mile stretch jointly maintained with Moultrie County. Under an intergovernmental agreement, Douglas County will cover 55% of the local match, while Moultrie County will fund 45%. The HSIP grant follows additional state funding from a recent $400 million legislative infrastructure package, which attracted over $2.5 billion in project requests statewide. The Douglas County received $2.69 million through that initiative, allowing a south mile of the project to move forward without the use of local tax or motor fuel funds. "It's now 100% funded," Crane said. "There's a huge burden lift off the county. It helps us not only maintain our current system, but plan for future maintenance and improvement needs." Crane said the funding will also help align county work with ongoing IDOT improvements along US 45 and other regional corridors. "It allows us to forecast future projects like the one connecting to the Canadian National Railroad in Villa Grove," he said. "It's a huge benefit to Douglas County's highway system." Meanwhile, progress continues on Springfield Road, where crews completed the first lift of leveling binder this week across 4.33 miles. The project has been slowed by a supply delay on a reinforcement layer being shipped from New York to Chicago. "We're in a bit of limbo right now," Crane said. "If we get the shipment by Wednesday, we'll finish the first 2 miles and complete the project before the first week of November. If not, the project may be done for the year." Crane said communication remains ongoing with local Amish residents and other motorists as work continues. In addition to road projects, the Douglas County Transit Authority received more than $1 million in supplemental state funding for a long-planned bus storage facility. The original project, approved prior to the pandemic, had been delayed due to rising construction costs. The new funds will allow the project to proceed at the Douglas County Highway Department property on South Prairie Street. "That building will ultimately become a county asset," Crane said. "It's another example of how this funding helps not just our roadways, but our overall transportation infrastructure." And the last main page story, "Rock Solid, Shoemaker Retires After 50 Years in Mining," by Ben Crane. When Alan Shoemaker wrapped up his final day at Tuscola Stone Company earlier this year, it marked the end of a 50-year mining career that began the very same place 5 decades ago, the same town, the same company, and the same values passed down from his father. Shoemaker's story in mining started in 1972 when his family moved from Lafayette, Indiana to Tuscola. His father had accepted a sales position at the newly established Tuscola Stone Company, and the 60-year-old Alan suddenly found himself trading a high school of 2,500 students for a small-town community that was not much bigger than that. "It was a big change," Shoemaker said, "but everybody in Tuscola and Douglas County made me feel welcome. That's why this place has always been special to me." The day after graduating from Tuscola High School, Shoemaker followed his father's footsteps and took a job at the Rock Quarry. He worked there for a few months before exploring other opportunities, eventually joining the coal industry, a move that would define the next half century of his professional life. He began as a union miner and quickly moved into leadership, serving as vice president of his local within his first 10 years. When management positions opened, Shoemaker was encouraged to apply and accepted the challenge. "People saw leadership in me that I didn't even see in myself," he said. "I wanted to learn how to lead the right way by listening to the guys who did the real work." In 1986, Shoemaker moved to Southern Illinois for a management position and spent the next several years in small mining towns that reminded him of home. But the industry changed in the mid-1990s with the implementation of the Clean Air Act, which placed new limits on coal-fired power plants. As the market shifted, Shoemaker transitioned from coal to agri-mining, joining Vulcan Materials Company in 1995. That opportunity brought him full circle. Within a few years, he was back in central Illinois living in his hometown and opening a Vulcan office in Champaign. Later, Tuscola Stone Company, the same business where his father began his career, reached out about a management role. "I'd barely been retired 2 weeks when they called," he said with a laugh. "It just felt right. I brought my underground and surface mining experience, and I got to finish my career right where my dad started his. I know he'd be proud of that." Shoemaker spent nearly 20 years managing Tuscola Stone before officially retiring in 2025. Over that time, he also served on the board of Illinois Association of Aggregate Producers, including a term as president. Through the IAAP, he helped expand workforce development programs, teacher workshops, and student outreach efforts to highlight career opportunities in mining. "Mining isn't just hard hats and shovels," he said. "It's engineering, geology, safety, accounting. It's one of those best-paying, most stable jobs out there. We just have to tell that story better." Throughout his career, Shoemaker said his greatest satisfaction came not from titles or awards, but from people he worked alongside. "I haven't accomplished one thing by myself," he said. "It took a bunch of smart, hardworking people to help me along the way." As he reflected on 5 decades in mining, Shoemaker said he feels nothing but gratitude for the career, the people, and the place that shaped him. I found a path that wasn't even looking for and made a life out of it, he said. I've been awfully blessed. I got to finish right where it all started, in Tuscola. We'll move now to the obituaries. Homer Paul Ramsey, 90, of Arcola, passed away at 8:37 p.m. on Saturday, October 11th, 2025, at his home, surrounded by family. Per Homer's wishes, private family services will be held at the Edwards Funeral Home in lieu of flowers. Memorial has been made to the Arcola Sports Boosters. Reed L. Cornwell, 71, of Sullivan, passed away at 1:40 p.m. Thursday, October 9th, 2025, in his residence. Visitation will be held from 4 to 6 p.m. Monday, October 20th, at the Reed Funeral Home, Sullivan. Memorials are suggested to the St. Jude Children's Hospital or the Sullivan Fire and Ambulance Service. Sovilla E. Yoder Gingrich, 98, of Arthur, passed away on Monday, October 6, 2025, at her residence. Funeral services were held Saturday, October 11th, at the Stephen Brenneman residence, Arthur. Bishop Stephen Brenneman officiated. Visitation was held Thursday, October 9th, and Friday, October 10th, at Steve Brenneman residence. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Sharon J. Thompson, 84, of Bourbon, passed away at 2:23 a.m. on Thursday, October 9th, 2025, at Goldwater Care in Clinton. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, October 18th, at the Bourbon Baptist Church, 98626 North CR 475 East Tuscola. Burial will come in the Bourbon Cemetery. Visitation will be held from 9 to 11 a.m. on Saturday at the church. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Betty Jane Lash, 78, of Mattoon, formerly of Arcola, passed away at 2 p.m. on Sunday, October 12, 2025, at Sarah Bush Lincoln Health Center. Funeral services will be held at 1 p.m. Saturday, October 18th, at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street, Arcola. Burial will follow in the Arcola Cemetery. Visitation will be held 2 hours prior to the funeral home from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m. on Saturday at the funeral home. Roberta Ann Washer Bickers Hudson, 84, of Camargo, passed away Saturday, October 4, 2025, at home in Camargo, surrounded by her family. Visitation services were held Saturday, October 11th, at Joins Funeral Home, Villa Grove, with Pastor Duane Piercy officiating. The next article, former Tuscola resident in National Spotlight. You may have seen his face or heard his name, often mispronounced, on national television. What you may not know is that Major General William Enyart is a former Douglas County resident with strong ties here. Both of his parents are from the area, and Enyart attended junior high school in Tuscola. Both of his parents, William Lee Enyart Sr. and Alta Enyart, née Dallas, returned to Douglas County or were living in Tuscola at the time of their deaths. His only sibling, Dave, a retired U.S. Army First Sergeant and Vietnam veteran, was living in Murdoch at the time of his death. General Enyart has been a regular source on News Nation for 7 years and more recently has appeared on Forbes, ABC News, NPR, MSNBC, and other media. One of his appearances garnered more than 1.4 million views online. Another, featuring his testimony to the Senate Judiciary Committee, has more than 500,000 views. He is uniquely qualified to comment on current affairs, particularly regarding the deployment of the National Guard troops. General Enyart is a former U.S. congressman and also a former Illinois adjutant general, where he commanded more than 13,000 troops and oversaw the largest deployment of the Illinois Army and National Guard since World War II. He's also a retired lawyer, an author, and a former journalist. Enyart spoke last week with the County Chronicle regional editor David Porter, their first cousins, to discuss his rise as media source and about current affairs issues. Media career. His media career began almost 3.5 years ago when Russia invaded Ukraine. I had served in Ukraine. I'd commanded troops in a NATO exercise in Ukraine, Enyart explained. A friend connected him with St. Louis Media, which led to a News Nation producer reaching out after seeing coverage of the SIU Alumni Association website. I don't know if it's my 15 minutes of fame or if it will continue. I'm not looking to be an internet influencer, he said. When I left Congress, I got my First Amendment rights back. I'm not running for anything but the county line, as my friends say, so I have the freedom to say pretty much what I really think. National Guard deployment. A federal judge recently blocked the use of the National Guard in Illinois for 2 weeks through a temporary restraining order. Enyart explained the legal mechanics and expressed deep concerns about using Guard troops for civilian law enforcement. The National Guard is a wonderful organization. I spent close to half my life in that organization, he said. However, he emphasized critical distinctions. We're not a civilian law enforcement agency. Our soldiers and airmen are not trained in civilian law enforcement. We're not trained in investigations, traffic stops, or ensuring that a person's constitutional rights are respected if we stop them or arrest them. He contrasted appropriate guard use, floods, hurricanes, blizzards, even the 2012 NATO conference in Chicago with 4,000 guardsmen with current deployments. When they called in the Texas Guard and were asserting they were going to put these folks on the street, they don't even know any of these people. There was no coordination. There's no command and control. The hidden cost. Enyart detailed costs rarely discussed in public discourse. A typical private first class makes about $91 a day, roughly $11 an hour, while a kid flipping burgers in Illinois makes $15 an hour. Beyond lost wages, families lose emotional and financial support. Employers must also hold jobs and cover absent for absent workers. Students deployed for 60 days could lose their entire semester or more. What do you think the family thinks about that when they're missing their soldier, he asked, referencing videos of guardsmen picking up trash at the Washington Monument. These kids always loved flood duty because they knew they were helping their neighbors. They're not there picking up cigarette butts in Washington, D.C. because the president wants the drama of videos of troops rolling into town. The damage to recruitment and retention concerns him deeply. We're one trigger pull away from another Kent State incident, he warned, referencing the 1970 tragedy that stained the Guard's reputation for a generation. Legal and constitutional issues. Enyart spoke frankly about current administration actions. A federal district court judge in Chicago has already ruled that ICE is acting unconstitutionally, engaging in violent, unprovoked behavior against citizens. He addressed the personnel liability of service members given potentially illegal orders. The Nuremberg defense does not work, he stated. If it's an unlawful act and you commit it, you are personally liable. He noted that under the Posse Comitatus Act, federal military forces conducting civilian law enforcement could face felony charges. He believes Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth fired top military lawyers specifically to avoid legal pushback. Those JAGs, in all likelihood, would have stood up to him, he said, and told him that you can't do this. Press freedom. As a journalism graduate, Enyart expressed alarm at attacks on media freedom. It's simply appalling. It violates one of the very basic precepts of this nation. He criticized major media organizations for capitulating to pressure, noting ABC's $16 million settlement. You don't stop a bully by trying to buy him off. He also expressed concern about media empires controlled by oligarchs and encouraged news consumers to diversify their sources. I read three print newspapers and I read several online publications, he said, noting he's likely not the only person on the block here in Belleville that still get 3 points of newspapers delivered daily. Economic concerns? Enyart highlighted economic impacts often overlooked in partisan media. John Deere lost $500 million in one quarter due to tariffs. Soybean prices have dropped by roughly half. China was buying 80% of its soybeans from the U.S. How many are they buying now? None. Zero. Where are they buying them? Brazil. I'm sure Fox News didn't say that John Deere lost $500 million last year, he noted. I predicted when Trump was reelected that he would crash the economy within 3 years. I revise that. I don't think it's going to take as long as 3 years. Looking ahead, regarding the 2026 midterms, Enyart believes the administration will do everything in their power to ensure that the Republicans do not lose control of either the House or the Senate, whatever that requires. He worries about the integrity of free and fair elections. For 2028, he favors a moderate Midwesterner or Southerner who could fill that tent, citing successful Illinois presidencies under Carter, Clinton, and Obama. He praised Illinois Governor Pritzker's 7 consecutive balanced budgets and 8 bond rating improvements. Final thoughts. Despite acknowledging hate emails and the antagonistic comments, Enyart remains undeterred. I understand when you take a stand against this administration, then you can anticipate that there will be retaliation. I'm sure that there are things that I say today that will upset people, anger people, cause them to withdraw into their Fox News silo. Fox News is a proven liar, and so many of the other right-wing news channels, Newsmax and so on, have been sued and have lost. That was not weaponization. They either settled the cases or were found guilty of defaming people by a jury of peers, or in the case of Fox News, forked over $750 million because they knew they would lose. That's the only reason you give away that much money. So I would urge people to broaden your horizon. Don't sit there glued. And you know, you can say the same thing for MSNBC. Although I appear on it, it has a bent, and you need to understand that there's an editorial bent there. I'm not a paid shill for the Democratic Party. I'm never going to run for office again. But there are people out there who speak the truth. Unfortunately, Donald Trump has seized control of the media universe and people listen to it. Friends, the emperor has no clothes. The next article, Press Freedom is Worth Fighting For by the rambling man David Porter. Protecting press freedoms isn't about the right or the left, it's about right and wrong. The recent attacks on the press in Chicago are not merely verbal attacks, they're actually physical, dangerous attacks. Donald Trump has demonstrated the press, has demonized the press for years, mostly over opinion pieces that he doesn't like, the very essence of what the First Amendment is there to protect. Then he started handpicking journalists who can cover the White House and now the Pentagon to ensure favorable coverage. Now in Chicago, the administration is using tear gas and rubber bullets to drive away the media, not to dissuade unfavorable coverage, but to prevent any coverage at all. You know, if I was going to zip tie a little boy or shoot a priest or tackle a grandma or separate kids from their parents or arrest U.S. citizens without probable cause or due process, I probably wouldn't want a journalist around either, snapping pictures and taking notes and telling the American people what I had done. Why would you be afraid of media coverage if your actions were righteous? You got to control the message if you're going to light the match to the Constitution. When you already have the Congress and the courts, then all is left to control is the media. And by media, I mean American people. By design, the media isn't paid for or controlled by the government. It's only check and balances that doesn't belong to Uncle Sam. It's necessary and democracies demand it. I've tried to sit on the sidelines, but this week a close, longtime friend of mine became a casualty in the chaos in Chicago. Not from a stray bullet, but from a threat of a sleeve of America's unraveling. Don Craven, who I have known for more than 40 years and once worked for, abruptly resigned as the head of the Illinois Press Association over the handling of litigation aimed at protecting the journalists getting gassed and shot at. According to the news reports, Craven signed on to the litigation on behalf of the IPA. The board of directors then directed him to remove the organization from the lawsuit, which he did. He then resigned, presumably because he did not agree with that decision. The IPA is one of the largest newspaper associations in the country. I served as its communication director for 12 years under three different executive directors. It is not a journalism organization per se. It is a publisher's group whose purpose is to support the interests of newspapers. Whether Don was right or wrong, to add the IPA to the lawsuit is an internal personal issue. But I will say this, if the newspaper publishers are not willing to stand up for the rights of their reporters to cover legitimate news without fear of being shot at, God help us all. Don was right to step down. It was a display of integrity that seems increasingly rare these days. When you draw a line in the sand, you have to be willing to defend it, and standing up for the First Amendment, the Constitution, and American values is a line worth defending. I understand the risk. The bulk of newsprint used in America comes from Canada, and a retaliatory tariff would cause real hardship in the industry, which it did during Trump's first term. I owned three community newspapers at that time, barely squeaking by. The tariff increased my printing cost 25% overnight. Couple that with a global pandemic, and it was a death knell. None of those papers are still publishing today. You have to ask yourself, is this hill I'm willing to die on? Whether you're risking your life or your livelihood, it doesn't feel like there's a huge difference. But when the hill is in the very essence of your industry purposes, then yes, it's time to dig in your heels and hold the line. If you aren't willing to fight for what you believe in, then you don't really believe in it. And we have time for some briefs. Arthur Pumpkin Carving. Anyone interested in carving pumpkins for the Pumpkin House in Arthur are asked to come to Knights Court on Wednesday, October 22nd from 4:30 to 8 p.m. Close to 60 pumpkins will need to be carved that evening. Over 200 creative pumpkins will be on display starting October 24th until October 31st at the Pumpkin House in downtown Arthur. Rotary Food Drive. The Tuscola Rotary Food Drive will be held on Saturday, October 18th. To donate, you only have to leave non-perishable food at your front door, and they will do the rest. If you'd rather leave a cash donation, make your check out to SAM Food Pantry, and they will pick that up as well. Kiwanis Kids Day. The Tuscola Kiwanis will be in full force on Friday, October 21st and Saturday, October 25th. To ask for donations to benefit local programs and the children of Tuscola. Many Tootsie Pops will be distributed to donors in appreciation. Here's a partial list of programs and organizations that Kiwanis helps to sponsor and support. North Ward Breakfast, Backpack Program, Sam's Pantry, TCCHS Key Club, and East Prairie Builders Club. And that is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerking saying goodbye and see you again next week.